This is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits in Ukiah, 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, and KZYX.org on the World Wide Web. Stay tuned for Education Now, which is being brought to you tonight by our members and regeneration hypnotherapist, Julia Velasquez. Hypnotherapy for addictions such as smoking cessation, weight control, major life changes. By appointment, 707-357-0294. www.regenerationhealing.com. And now, let me get my guest on the line. I'm Athena Melville with Education Now, and I'll be right back with you. Let's get some music going here.
Must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past.
Hello, is this Andrea?
Is just a goodbye.
This is Athena. Okay, so I'm going to put you on hold, and you'll hear your intro.
Well,
welcome to the airwaves.
Their father's hell. It slowly go by and feed them on your dreams. The one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why. If they told you, you would cry. So just look at them and cry.
Well, welcome to Education Now. This is Athena Melville, and you probably heard me get my guest on the line because I forgot to turn the mic off. So I want to welcome Andrea Chiara, Director of the Educational Programs for the New Mexico Media Literacy Project, who's our guest tonight on Education Now. Prior to joining the New Mexico Media Project, Andrea provided community education in a variety of settings, schools, juvenile detention facilities, substance abuse treatment centers, community organizations. She's facilitated Young Women United, a community organization project by and for young women of color in Southwest or Southeast Albuquerque. And as Director of Educational Programs for the New Mexico Media Project, Andrea is delivering media literacy presentations and trainings in New Mexico, across the USA, and internationally. Tonight, we want to focus on media literacy in the schools, media and media ownership, and media literacy in news. So let's get Andrea here. Andrea, are you there? Hello, Andrea, are you there?
Yes, thank you for having me.
Did you hear our introduction?
Yes, I did.
Oh, great. I know that through media literacy, your intention is to cultivate critical thinking and activism.
Yes.
And so if we could start right out with media literacy in the schools and how you facilitate that.
Certainly. The program itself that we do and some of the presentations that we've done have focused on issues of health, and we've been working with our statewide Department of Health, and which is also one of our primary funders, on working with young people and students to think critically about media, and particularly about advertising and advertising's impact on issues such as health, community, and culture. And so those are sort of the primary aspects that we work with. And in doing that, we work with young people then to actually deconstruct advertising and provide tools of deconstruction so that when advertising happens, people are aware. And that also means that our programs have shifted even in the last few years as advertising continues to shift.
Yes,
for example, we have sort of like traditional advertising that we might see if we're watching television, and then there's a commercial break that happens, and then the programming resumes. But what we are seeing increasingly is that the programs themselves contain advertisement in the way of product placement. So we're also increasing our work around getting people to think critically around product placement, and so that people are actually conscious during programs to be aware of what are the brands that are being put into the programs. And there are even companies, some companies now, that will digitally alter reruns. So if you were to see the original program itself, it may not have, you might see a table with something, with props on it, for example. But if you were to see the digitally altered version that comes in reruns, you would see like a specific name brand of crackers, for example, now placed on the table. And there come, and so some corporations pay companies to digitally alter and put their products into reruns.
Yes,
and so it's really working with people to get, think critically about all of that, about sort of what's going on within our media culture.
Yes, when Belinda Rollins, our director, manager here at KZYXNZ, she first led me to you, and I followed up on that lead, and what should come up on your website but the campaign for a commercial-free childhood, which is ccfc@bcc.harvard.edu, which is exactly where I had gone with my first talk on this program with the Dr. Crane, with William Crane. And so it was really beautiful to see that you were working with them. You were facilitating them, I think, on the website at that time, right?
Yes. Well, we've worked with them, and we've actually had someone from the organization come and do a presentation at our Catalyst Institute.
Right.
And that's something that we actually offer twice a year. So if anybody is interested in wanting to learn how to do media literacy trainings, the New Mexico Media Literacy Project offers twice a year a 4-day intensive training.
It sounds wonderful. I know that Belinda and I have talked a bit about getting media literacy into our local schools and going into the schools and asking students to actually prepare media to bring to our station, and that's very exciting to me. And, of course, deconstructing all of the images that they get really helps cultivate those critical thinking skills and turns them, into activists.
Yes,
which is extraordinarily exciting. Well, now about media and media ownership, which is really a hot item right now. It's very terrifying what's going on. Do you have some words for us about media and media ownership?
I sure do, of course, right?
Yes.
Well, as you know, we're looking at a time where we are operating under a media culture where we have primarily six media conglomerates that control most of the media that we interact with, right? And that's in terms of corporate media. And certainly the importance then when we hear that, when we're like, wow, we're really talking about six corporations, for me what comes up then is what are we doing to ensure at the same time that independent media is out there and is going to be able to maintain the voices that we're not going to hear when we're looking at six corporations. Another important piece to consider is that the corporations, while yes, we have six of them, many of them own stock in each other's companies. And they are vested in what's going on with each other at the same time. So they're not necessarily in competition with each other as much as they are also in support of each other. And which is something to think about, because it could then become five corporations or four, and these are all things for us to consider.
Right.
For me, what's also interesting to just sort of connect back to issues such as product placement is that we also have to look at who's sitting on the boards of these organizations. So, because who's sitting on the boards then also is also who has control over who's dictating the main message, right?
Yes.
So it's not as if we have general public, it's not just like general public or community members that are sitting on these boards of these media conglomerates. We have other corporations who have their corporate interests at stake who are sitting on the boards of these organizations. So if I'm, working for Pepsi and I'm on the board, for example, of Disney, then I'm going to want to make sure that my product and Disney get associated somehow. So I might make sure that anytime I'm watching ABC, right, if that ABC has my product in their program somehow, or possibly even writes a story around my product in one of their programs. And ABC, of course, is owned by Disney. So I'm just trying to, like, make these connections.
Yes.
And so we also have to look at the fact that some of the product placement that is happening is a result of who's sitting on the boards of these corporations also.
Right.
And so all of this gets connected.
Really, the airwaves are owned by we the people.
Yes, they are.
And so few people know that. That's another really important point about why we need media literacy. So
Definitely.
Few people know that the people own the airwaves and that they have been usurped by these big corporations with the support of the FCC. There were two big scandals that came down with the FCC this week. And they're not reporting to the public about the conglomeration and letting two or three or four corporations, just as you're saying, control all of that media, and also, you know, taking out the small local stations, the
mm-hmm.
small stations, the small radio stations that are local, and wanting them, you know, to turn them into just conduits for the major or the big radio stations. Are you experiencing that in your travels, concern about that?
Yes, and also even locally here, in terms of like looking at Albuquerque, for example, we know that Clear Channel owns, I believe it's six of our radio stations alone
right.
in Albuquerque. And that's a substantial amount when you're looking at, you know, a relatively small city. And when I travel, but similarly to what you said, in terms of my presentations, it also is really dependent on who my audience is. Sometimes, and you know, in terms of age group, but also where they're located, what types of access to information do people have, and not everyone, you know, makes the ownership connection. And again, if people are relying on corporate media to get their information, which some people have to do,
right,
because they don't have the same options, they don't have access to independent media or even to the internet, then they're also not going to get the stories about media because corporate media isn't putting them out there.
That's,
you know,
right.
Including stories around, like, you know, on the FCC, for example. And so I think it's also, so part of my job and even NMMLP's job is to continue to talk about media ownership, but also to do it in a way that makes sense and that also connects to communities and works with the work that they're already doing, right? Because many people are doing a lot of justice work. No matter sort of what community you go to, you have people that want justice. You have people that are doing anti-oppression work, and whether
Thank
or not
goodness.
They know it, some of what they're doing is really connected to these same issues. And so it's also just really about providing information so that the work that people are already doing, then it doesn't feel like one more thing they have to do. It's about how do I make sure that I'm framing this in a way that people are able to see that they're already sort of doing that work or connecting it, and that it doesn't feel like one more issue that a community has to take on.
Right.
And I think that becomes important, too. One of the things I have experienced is sort of in the mainstream media reform movement is there's sort of, I feel like, a sort of framework that they want, you know, that I think is sort of imposed, like, oh, this is the way that it's going to happen and it's going to look like this. And I don't think that that's true. I think that it can look a number of different ways and that we have to get comfortable with communities really putting together their own agendas and figuring out, you know, and figuring out their own infrastructures and doing this work.
Yes, I agree with you, and I think that is the way to justice. That's what I was going to ask you, actually, was how do you see pursuing justice through the media? You're saying it really depends on your audience, how you would pursue that.
How I pursue the conversation?
Yes.
Yes, because I think I would want to know what is the work that you're doing? What are you doing in your community right now that you're concerned about? And from environmental issues to issues of sexual violence to issues of even educational systems. All of this we can connect in some way or another to looking at media systems, right?
Right.
You know, from what is it that, what are their programming content, to what do we see in the news, how are stories framed, who's giving credibility and who isn't. From what, you know, again, so if I'm talking about environmental issues or sexual violence, like I've had some sort of experience with media somehow telling my story or not telling my story, and I have feelings about that. And so then my role, I see, is also then connecting those issues and
yeah.
talking about, you know, where have you seen problems? And, oh, by the way, did you know that you have the right to hold your media system accountable?
Yes.
Because they actually are accountable to us.
Right.
You know, that's who they are supposed to be accountable to.
Yeah.
But, and it is hard, I think, to feel powerful when these systems are so large and they want us to feel powerless, right?
Yes.
And they'd rather have us sort of numb out or be overwhelmed and go buy something instead of actually, you know, writing the letter, talking to our neighbors, you know, whatever the steps are that we want to do to create a media system that is more representative of who we actually are.
Of all
of
we the people.
Right, and that lets us dictate. And again, you know, there was a time, even with television, that really public, it was about the public interest more so than it is today. And now we see it being about corporate interest. And that's where I feel that we're really going to lose out, because corporate interests aren't necessarily about justice.
No, they definitely aren't about justice. They're about making money.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the goal. I noticed that, you know, you designed, you helped develop a custom media literacy curriculum for the Albuquerque Public Schools
yeah.
and Community Technology Centers Network. And when you did that, do you, as well as helping them learn to deconstruct, like advertising and other pitches that they get, do you talk about spin and fake news?
You know, we did with the community technology centers. Again, it depends on the curriculum. So, for example, the Albuquerque Public Schools curriculum was specific to gun violence prevention. And that was federal money that they had with a program called Project Sentry. And they had seen, one of the women who was putting it together had seen me do a presentation around gender and intimate partner violence, and also talking about the WWE, the World Wrestling Entertainment System. And so in there we did a lot about like fantasy versus reality. So she came forward to me and said, I really like those concepts. Do you think you can apply those to doing some sort of media literacy for gun violence prevention? And so we worked with her on developing that. And again, that, you know, that was their specific topic. So we did a range of looking at, you know, sort of what's going on in reality with gun violence. What do we see happening in the media with gun violence? What, you know, what do you think about all of this? So again, getting people to sort of think critically about what George Gerbner deems happy violence, where we see violence without actual consequences. Some of us are more familiar, if we think of cartoons, it becomes really clear, right? Where we see a cartoon character, something happens to them, they blow up, for example, and then in the next scene, they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what we'd get. With WWE, in terms of wrestling, you would see, we see characters that literally get thrown across the ring or are dropped from ladders, for example, and then they get up.
Right.
Because it's all staged, right?
Right.
But, you know, in terms of happy violence with guns, we may see someone even getting shot in a cartoon or on a program, and they survive it miraculously. And so it was really getting people, especially kids, to know the difference between what's sort of going on in the media culture and what's taking place in real world, and also being conscious that there are people and students who may have even experienced gun violence firsthand, either, you know, something that's happened in their neighborhood or in their family, and wanting to really respect and honor that some of them are very clear on what the reality of gun violence is. So that's how that program was developed. So we didn't talk about spin in that particular curriculum because of the framework that we were given for it. However, with the community technology centers, what they wanted, and these were sent out nationally, right? So we created a curriculum that was sent nationally out to the different CTCs. They wanted something that was going to really get people to think critically, not just about deconstructing, but then also about constructing, right? Because many of the community technology centers, the communities there are putting together their own programs. And so with that, we did have the opportunity. We actually even had specific news clips where some of us on staff had taped the same news story on different channels, from independent media to PBS to corporate media. And then so then we had a section in there where we compared that same news story and said, you know, what do you think? In fact, we even compared, I think, two corporate media stories, and even saw that within there was a very big difference with how they framed the story. So we also talked about framing as well as sort of spinning, but also then being conscious, saying, okay, so if you're going to be creating your own media, how are you going to make sure that you're conscious about, you know, how you're sort of imposing yourself into that? You know, the reality is we're never going to have anything that's truly objective, but how do we get clear then about being transparent in our subjectivity?
Yes, and so do these same techniques help you when you hear fake news, when someone hears fake news, help them distinguish that it's fake news?
Are you talking about, like, for example, watching The Daily Show?
Yeah.
Is that how you're defining fake news?
No, I'm talking about...
Are you talking about video news releases?
Yeah, video news releases actually that are presented as news, but they're not.
Right.
They're someone that a recognizable person from, television or Hollywood or something... supposedly giving you news, or actually a real news person, and then you find out that person was paid to make that news.
Mm-hmm.
It was what they call fake news.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know how you would really see through that. Seems like
right.
It shouldn't be legal.
well, or there should be some stipulations around things needing to be labeled what they are, right? So that if I'm watching something and I'm being told it's news, but it's really the product of a public relations firm that's working on behalf of, I don't know, Minute Maid, then there needs to be some sort of disclaimer, right? But it's not set up that way. It's not set up that way. And so it is marketed and packaged as news. And there's a number of reasons, right, for VNRs, you know, from, the, you know, including the fact that many times there's, because of, again, to go back to media ownership, because of media ownership, and you have people getting cut as corporations continue to merge, so you have people getting cut, you have less people in the newsroom than,
right,
than previously. You also have people who are journalists who, and this has happened also in the last, you know, decade or so, where you look at academia and the reality of journalism and PR have been merged in some schools, not in all, have become merged. So then you have journalists / PR professionals who are the journalists for the news. So that's another thing you have happening. And then you also have less access and less and smaller budgets for them to actually be able to go out and tell the stories that they may want to tell.
Right.
And so a packaged news release, and then, you know, makes it simple. And then you also have, I'm sure that this is true for some journalists, not all, you also have people who are getting lazy in their jobs. And so you have this, you know, a package VNR comes in and it makes it really easy to do that 3-minute, 4-minute story on a product or on the government, as we know that happened, right?
Yeah.
But what concerns me also is that this is happening within local news. So then we actually aren't even getting local stories about what's going on. And I think that's another piece that we really have to work with holding, again, our media accountable. I don't need to know what kind of sunscreen to wear because a PR firm paid you. I'd like to know what's going on this weekend that I might want to go visit. Like, what's going on in the museum? What shows are taking place that I might want to see? What's happening at a park that in my community? Whatever it is, those aren't the stories that we get in our local news. Many times we're not even getting local stories.
Right. I think that was one of the big scandals with the FCC this week, was that they didn't report to the public that really there wasn't as much local news with the conglomerates, because of course that would lend weight to the case that we need these small
right.
community stations.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the big scandals of the week. I know that Project Censored, which is on the web, and that a lot of scientists, which is very sad to me, have chosen, you know, to get corporate money. They will say things in their scientific research that aren't supported by the rest of the scientific community. And if something is reported that that some big corporation has paid for that they don't want published, then they own your thoughts and they censor it. And that's why Project Censored exists.
Right.
So it's a big problem. I know that people can get information on at freepress.net
mm-hmm.
on these things as well as Project Censored and it's a frightening time. It's a time I think that we all need to be very concerned about the media, and it can only start in our schools. I mean, the fact that most people don't know that we own the media, that's a problem with our schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's where they can learn these things. I was going to ask you about media and literacy and the news, but do you feel that you've covered that?
Well, we've talked a little about news. I think
uh-huh.
that in terms of, so we talked about VNRs. I think we've talked also, is there anything specific
VNRs,
about
VNRs? VNRs, tell me what that VNRs.
Those are the video news releases.
Video news releases, yes.
And we actually do a more intense piece around that in that Catalyst Institute also. We talk a lot about even the construction of news also, I think, is important. And getting people to think critically about the fact that, okay, if they have, you know, let's say it's a 30-minute news program, let's say 12 minutes of that is already commercial, you have maybe 5 to 6 that's going to be VNRs. I mean, if you start looking at it, it's like less and less. And we also have an increase in what gets what we sort of call entertainment news, right? That it's a news story when a celebrity gets married, and that has nothing to do with my local community. You know? So that I think the increase of celebrity news is also something to look at too.
Yes, I do too.
You know, I think that's another piece of you know, that's getting hacked out. And that any time these stories come in about celebrities or about products or about our government, that, you know, these sort of video news releases that are sent out, that means they've made a choice to cut something else.
Yes.
So we have to start looking at who's making decisions. It's all constructed. They're making choices about what stories to run, and in doing that, they're making choices about what stories not to run. And I think that's also just as important to think about. You know, why didn't we, you know, hear about random things, but why didn't we hear about the local organization that took on a corporation, it's maybe a smaller corporation in their area, and won? Or why didn't we hear about the group of young people at the high school who put together a really amazing prevention play that they are putting and that they're running it in the classrooms now? Or, you know, whatever it is, but it's just like, what's going on? Like,
right.
People are making choices about the stories they're telling, and they're making choices about the stories they're not telling. And those are just as important.
Well,
and we should be asking more questions about that.
Do you have suggestions about where we should direct those questions, how we should act to take back our media and to bring it into our schools?
One of the ways that we have worked with schools, again, because of the Department of Health, we have access to schools because we're funded to do a certain number of presentations in the schools. And most of the time, the schools are really excited and happy to get something that's free.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I realize not everybody, you know, may have that. But, you know, also to think about, okay, where can I go to get money or to get funding to do, because many times we do need the funding, to do some of these programs. Or if you don't need the funding and you can volunteer, or you have access through your own organization already to do some of these programs, I think to come in a way that's not threatening, I think, is always important. To really let schools know that you want to be there to supplement what they're doing. And that gets harder as schools are increasingly having to work within the confines of No Child Left Behind.
Oh, yes, I know.
So all of this gets connected again, right? If I'm a teacher and I have to work within these certain constraints, again, I don't think I can add one more thing into my curriculum. And so what we have found to be effective also is to really create the curriculum and say, look, we're actually meeting your standards.
Uh-huh.
This curriculum meets your standards. It's working within the, you know, your guidelines, and it's media literacy.
Right.
Because we have found that you can really talk about any topic from social studies to math to English, and media literacy can become a component of that.
Yes.
Because it's all, you know, again, it's all connected. And so we've even created, you know, we have different curriculum too, like DVDs and CDs, for example, on looking at those issues.
Great. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Like one of our most recent products is challenging the debt industry and looking at predatory lending. Well, that can be something you can incorporate into a classroom for a variety of reasons. You know, it could be you're doing something on finances, you're doing something maybe on the history of poverty in the U.S., and, you know, and you could, you know, so there's ranges of ways that we can incorporate this information. But I do think sometimes you want to do it in a way that's really respectful of teachers and really, you know, coming from a place of understanding that they are working within constraints, so to make it as easy as possible for the teachers also.
Right. Yes, and they have to want it. They have to request it, and it can't be pushed on them. And, well, this is wonderful. It's about that time. I can't, the time just kind of flew past there. I don't know if it did for you too, Andrea, but
yes.
What have you been doing? I did want to ask you, what are you doing right now? Yourself.
In my work?
Yes.
I'm actually getting ready to leave for Pittsburgh. I am going to leave on Sunday. I'm doing a week-long program with the Pittsburgh Consortium of Independent Schools, and they are having me present in 8 schools from elementary to high school. I'm doing a presentation to the parents on Monday night, and then I'm in 2 schools a day, Tuesday to Friday, and I'll be working with the students that whole week.
Sounds
so
really fun.
So I have been preparing for that this week. That's what I've been doing.
It's my next sort of big thing on my plate.
It's
important work, and it sounds like it's important work, but you're also having fun doing it.
I am.
That's
I am.
Wonderful.
Having a great time.
Can you give us some contact information if the listeners would like to connect with you? Is there a way to do that?
Certainly. Our website is nmmlp.org. That stands for the New Mexico Media Literacy Project. And if people wanted to contact me directly, they can email me at quijada@aa.edu. And that Quijada is spelled Q-U-I-J-A-D-A. And also our phone, our main line, if people wanted to call, they can always call our office too. And that number is 505-828-31. I want to make sure I give the correct number. We're looking at 828-3129.
Very good. Very good. That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much, and I'm going to repeat that at the end of my show. I'm going to repeat the contact information for the New Mexico Media Project.
Great.
And I thank you so very much for being with me tonight, and I thank Belinda for leading me to you. It was wonderful doing the research and seeing your shining face on the Internet.
Thank you so much for having me. Everybody at the New Mexico Media Literacy Project was really excited that we were asked to do this, so it means a lot to us.
Great. It's going to be up on my website, and we're recording it.
Great.
Thanks so much again.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, that was Andrea Quijada. I'm not saying her name as beautifully as she does. And this is KZYXNZ, and you're listening to Education Now. I'm going to give you a little promo here while I get ready for the second half. And I hope I do it right. I'm working on it here. Oh.
Fourth Friday Forthright, Professor Franz de Waal, one of the world's leading primate behavior experts and author of Chimpanzee Politics, Bonobos, the Forgotten Ape, Peacemaking Among Primates, and most recently, Our Inner Ape, joins us to discuss the origins of right and wrong in humans and other animals. That's Friday, September 22nd at 1 o'clock here on KZYX and Z.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I'm looking forward to that myself, and I hope that you'll all listen. That's 1 o'clock on Forthright Friday. And in the future, we're going to be doing a show on violence and the arts. And so this information that you're going to be getting from Joy on Friday should be really quite wonderful. I also wanted to alert you to listen to Norman Duval tomorrow morning on the Access program at 9 o'clock in the morning. That should be quite wonderful as well. And I also wanted to say that Ukiah's Saturday Farmers Market is back in their regular space at Alex Thomas Plaza. Select fragrant melons, vine-ripened tomatoes, crisp and colorful peppers, just-picked corn, and much more. Taste the freshness of Farmers Market from 8:30 to noon through October. So there you have that. Well, for the second part of the show tonight, I'm going to be talking to you about the homeschool conference that I went to, that I attended and I participated in August 17th through the 20th at the Radisson Hotel in Sacramento. It was a wonderful conference. You can connect with them at www.hsc.org. And if you are homeschooling or if you know someone who is, I definitely recommend that you connect with this organization. It's wonderful. I did two workshops at the conference. A parent-child growth workshop and a parent empowerment workshop, and that was quite fun. This is one of the most wonderful workshops and conferences for teachers because the students are there, all of the kids are there, and so there's so many activities for students. There was a couple of teen lounges where the teens could go and talk and do games, and then they did do conferences in the teen centers as well. And one of them, which was very impressive, was why gay and lesbian marriage, why, and the whole civil liberties issue. I was so proud. What a progressive group. And hanging out in the speaker's lounge, meeting people, and children of all ages as well as adults would come through that speaker's lounge and want to talk about 9/11 and want to talk about the Constitution, and they wanted to talk about current events. I was so impressed, and it was wonderful. There was a whole gaming deck where kids were playing magic and chess and Scrabble, and there was another deck, all kinds of art, mask making, rock climbing. They were making foam weaponry. There was an area for the younger kids doing all kinds of things, and of course lots of adult participation, juggling, fencing, live music every night, dancing. It was just a wonderful event. And once again, if you are homeschooling or you know a homeschooler, this is a wonderful way to connect. Back when I had a private school, I called it a homeschool. As I told you in the past, after Proposition 13, I had decided to homeschool, and then that just grew. And this is a lot of the people who are participating in this come from that same background, where they just couldn't find everything that they needed in the public system, and so they decided to do it on their own, and then they met others of like mind, and they have now community, quite a huge community. The Northern California Homeschooling Association is over 10,000 members, and that was exciting. And I had first called my school Montessori Homeschool. Then I got so many calls from people who thought we were like a religious school, that we were homeschooling because of religion, and So we changed the name to Melville Montessori School. And I saw at this homeschooling conference there were not I couldn't find anyone that came from that religious bent at this homeschooling conference. So I would like to encourage all of you to check it out if you're interested in homeschooling. The last month we had Dr. John Melville on, and unfortunately it's up on my website now, all the programs on Pacific Sites, pacificesites.com/TildaHermes. All of the programs that have been on Education Now are up on the website, and this one will go up as well. But when we had Dr. John Melville on last month, the last 15 minutes of the program, the computer just didn't work, and so we don't have that. But I got lots of feedback from you about Dr. John and wanting him back to talk some more about mythology, psychology, and we will have him back. But if you'd like to contact Dr. John, it's john.melville, that's J-O-H-N dot M-E-L-V-I-L-L-E, at Wartburg, W-A-R-T-B-U-R-G dot E-D-U. Now, I was going to have John Cozzal on, author of Shame of the Nation, but he just can't make it. And, you know, I'm not feeling sad about that. This is a well-sought-after man who has done incredible work and is doing incredible work about the apartheid situation in many of our schools in this country, which is just disgraceful. But John Cozzal is going to be on alternative radio in October. That's the first Wednesday of October at 1 o'clock. I hope that you will be able to listen. If you can't, you can pick it up on alternativeradio.org, and you can read it or listen to it there. This is a voice that is you need to hear if you haven't heard John Cozzal. Now, I do plan for October to do a show on funding. I found a wonderful way to get funding to schools, and also two people who are going to talk to us about, is it possible to fund a model school with California's present funding, and I mean not if you're in Palo Alto where, you know, they never cut their funding, but just regular old California where they did cut the funding. And the answer is yes, and I've got a couple of people on there who are going to discuss the facts about that with us. So that's planned for October, but that is during pledge drive, so if we get bumped, we'll just follow it up in the future. Once again, I want to thank Belinda for turning me on to the media literacy in the schools, and we do plan to do more with the schools as we just, you know, refine things here at the station. Things are moving along. Now, the Silent Pledge Drive notices have gone out, and I'm hoping that you will respond to those so that we can just move to our goal as swiftly as possible, and there can be a lot more play and a lot less push during the pledge drive. So please do keep that in mind and see what you can do about that. Now, some of the things that I covered at the homeschool conference were that I recommended the Michael Oloff catalogs, which are quality materials and books that you know, you can choose materials that reflect your own child and your own philosophy, and they're quality. And once again, I recommend Theories of Development, the 5th edition by William Crane, and Reclaiming Childhood by William Crane, and The Psychology of Children's Art by Rhoda Kellogg, and Play Therapy by Virginia Axlin. Now, in terms of music for children, I just have not found a better recording than Free to Be You and Me by Marlo Thomas and Friends. And if you don't have that, I really do recommend it. It's really wonderful, especially now when all these repressive forces are upon us. And then a really beautiful science fiction fantasy by Chris Williamson called Lumiere. And Chris Williamson, of course, is a lovely, wonderful lesbian woman, and her music is wonderful. But this is exquisite, and it comes with actually a vocabulary of scientific terms about outer space. So, Lumiere by Chris Williamson. I want to encourage you all to know your rights as parents, and. In the future, if you are homeschooling, I do want to talk to you about how to use your local college, the importance of field trips, and, of course, all the latest brain research we got from Costa, Coe, and Crane. And we'll be talking about the arts and why and how, and more about mythology and movement, and, of course, why movement is so very, very, very important. It's really also important. Something fell down in the studio. That's what you heard. It's also very important to follow the child. And in the future, I want to talk about what that means. And reflective listening. The importance of limits and support. The importance of joy in work and play. Refining the senses, taste, touch, see, smell, hear, and feel, and then we'll go back into the Myers-Briggs and how that's connected to Jung and to our senses. And using the blindfold, use of a blindfold and how important that is, and games and books, and honoring the process. That's really what it's all about, honoring the process, helping children to learn to honor their process, and you should always be honoring yours. And how to use journals and other writing, and that's what we'll be focusing on. Now, some of the other things I want to encourage you to do, aside from responding to the silent pledge drive, is to think about what you'd like from this program, Education Now. I have been trying to address your feedback, and funding is one of them, and the arts is another, and I'm just moving along. So if you have suggestions, please send me mail at hermes@pacific.net. Or write to me at P.O. Box 381, Talmadge, California. Well, let's go into some outro music right now.
Some folks I used to know, used to smile and say hello. Spin the world and turn the page, entertaining from the stage. Father time forever true, loves its own and me and you. Disappear just like the sun when the day is done. World is falling down, hold my hand. It's a lonely sound, hold my hand. We'll follow the breeze and go like the wind, and look for a place where the wind blows in. World is falling down. Hold my hand, hold my hand, hold my hand.
Education Now has been brought to you tonight by hypnotherapist Julia Velasquez at regenerationhealing.com. And I want to thank the staff at KZYX and Z for all the help that they've given me. Someone called and asked if I was taking calls, and I'm not. But if you would like to see me take calls, please let Mary know. Send me an email if that's really what you want, and I'll do a show where I take calls. And I want to thank the producers of Education Now, the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education. I want to thank Belinda Rollins for the great work that she's doing with the upgrade on finally our Tower of Power, which we raise money for, is really going to reach all of those people out there that we've intended to reach. And I want to thank you, the listeners, and I hope that you have a great evening. Tonight at 8 o'clock after Earth and Sky, it's going to be the Treehouse with W. Dan, which is always extraordinarily fun, and I hope that you'll listen into that, and I hope that you're having a pleasant evening. I've got about 10 minutes here to go before you get to hear the end of this great song. Of course, the first music that we were listening to, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, their Deja Vu album, and then this Abby Lincoln is so fantastic. And I want to thank all of the programmers at KZYX and Z for the years of pleasure that they give me in the daily, the music and the news. It's all just wonderful.
Contact information for Andrea Quijada is www.nmmlp.org. That's the New Mexico Media Literacy Project. nmmlp.org. Or if you want to send her an email personally, it's Quijada, Quijada, at aa.edu. The phone number for the New Mexico Media Literacy Project is 505-828-3129. Good night, everyone.
Once again, that contact for Andrea is www.nmmlp.org.
Dawn and winter's here. We had a lot of rain last year. The news is really very sad. The time is late, the fruit is bad. The morning scum and roosters crow. People have no place to go and disappear just like the sun when the day is done. Oh, the world is falling down. The lonely sound, hold my hand. We'll follow the sun, live for the day, and look for a place where the children play. World is falling down, hold my hand. Hold my hand, hold my hand. Falling down, hold my hand, hold my hand, hold my hand, hold my hand.